This episode is presented by The Green Grape.
Hi guys, I'm Jamie Oliver and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. How amazing. For the past decade, they've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and so much more. It's been 10 years, and they're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show, Life's a Banquet. The show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible!
With your hosts, me, Brent Scott, and...
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about chocolate and wine and bread, champagne and scandal and crackers in bed.
I'm drunk!
Always.
Life's a banquet.
Want another?
Thought you'd never ask.
Welcome, everybody, to the show, Life's a Banquet, as you heard in our theme song, the show that's edible, spreadable, and pourable, but the highs and lows of all of that.
Good one, Bratton. You nailed it.
I nailed it. So, if you're just tuning in, this is our very, very first episode here in the heart of Bushwick. We moved from Fort Greene and Cobble Hill, took a little tour downtown into the dregs of Brooklyn.
Took the G to
yeah,
the
so
L.
So here we are on Heritage Radio Network. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you are just tuning in, Zara, should you want to tell us who we are?
I believe that your name is Bretton Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks that you killed your wife, but really a one-armed man did it. The only person that kind of believes you is Tommy Lee Jones.
Exactly. So
you're Bretton Scott. I'm Zara Tangora. And we're two chefs, cooks, besties, and we're here to talk to you about the highs and lows of all things food and drink.
Exactly. So each week, we'll take you through our subject of the week, and then we'll tell you about home cooking and the things we cooked and the parties we catered and the celebrities we cooked for and all the fabulous things involved and all the martinis we drank. So... that being said, Zara, how was your... it's been a long time.
It's been a long time. So we try to... we don't try. We do record weekly for the
yes.
past 27 weeks now. And we took a couple weeks off. We Christmased. We cooked. We cleaned. I laughed. I cried. I had a ball. I had a cow.
I went to Ireland.
Oh, yeah. You went... I mean, why are you asking me what I did? I didn't do anything. You went to Ireland.
I know.
Let's
I'm
hear
like,
about
oh,
it.
But, oh, I forgot to tell you.
Oh, by the way.
I zoomed over to Dublin and... because I really, really wanted to find out what shepherd's pie and Guinness stew tasted like, and actual Guinness. So we decided to go there. Me and my partner, boyfriend,
Preston.
Preston, yeah. So there we were on New Year's Eve, and
picture
and to picture it. It was Sicily, 1903. It was Dublin. It was a little bit dirtier than I thought in terms of the cute factor of a European city. It had some gruffness, and the first thing I did was get fish and chips, which I was mildly disappointed from. I was there for 10 minutes, and the guy got so mad at the delivery driver, and Uber Eats dude shows up.
In Dublin, there's Uber
Eats?
Yeah, so
I'm going,
I
get all these recommendations to go to this fish and chips spot, which I will not name because I had a very bad experience. Mm-hmm. But it's my first, you know, I'm there for 10 minutes and I'm walking with my luggage. I was like, I need fish and chips right now. And I need fish and chips. And the guy got so mad at the Uber Eats driver. He's like, what are you doing? You're looking at me. He's like, I saw you there. It was very intense. And then, so I feel like while he was yelling at the guy, he made my fish and chips.
Oh, he made it
and
angry.
And I felt like it was angry.
When you ate it, did you feel angry after?
Like, yeah, Preston and I got in a fight, and then it was horrible. But it's okay, because we ended up going to another pub to fix everything. So
right off the bat, you did not experience the luck of the Irish.
Well, not right yet.
Did you Irish goodbye anyone?
Wait, what's an Irish goodbye?
When you leave without saying goodbye.
Oh, I thought that was a ghost exit.
Phantom exit. Everyone in Ireland is a ghost.
Oh, well, I found out.
So what was some of the highlights of your trip, food-wise?
Some of the highlights were, well, I was expecting fishermen to be lugging off, you know, big rustic metal buckets of oysters and mussels off the sea. And that did not happen. The food culture is very quote unquote behind the times compared to, say, Brooklyn or Amsterdam or London or anything. So it's a little, I never saw anybody eating. So,
really?
Well, they were drinking. A lot of, you know, pub culture was a real thing.
What about potatoes?
Well, there
is that anti-Irish?
There are a lot of potatoes. With every meal, you get big chips, you know, and somebody got mad because I called them fries. Yeah. Well, it was there was a lot going on. But we did go to one really interesting restaurant called the Woolen Mills, which is kind of modern. And the food was very delicious. You know, basically the best meal there for me was either a pint of Guinness or some kind of like red ale, and then with a bowl of mussels, brown bread, Irish butter, and Irish butter is a real thing.
Yeah.
They had some seaweed butter. There were some really cool things.
Oh, how fabulous.
And then, I mean, some of the other, it's just about the pub. It's about the pub culture, and I kind of let go after a while. I was searching for the pot, you know, a pot of gold under the rainbow. I was like, I'm going to find the perfect bowl of mussels.
That's a stereotype. Found it, but for you, it wouldn't be a pot of gold. It would be a steaming lava hot pot of mussels under a rainbow.
Yes. And we did have a couple good mussels. And this brings me to the final part of my story.
Uh-oh, the bad mussels.
Well, our flight was, we had to get on the next day's flight because they were full, long story. So we're in Dublin. So we're like, hey, you know what? This gives us one more chance to, we went all over. We drove, we rented a car, we went off the cliffs, you know, the cliffs of Moher and Galway. And we went back and went to the oldest bar in the world, the oldest pub, Guinness Book of World Records. And suddenly I looked, I said, Guinness? This is where the Guinness Book of World Records started. Anyway, so
did you look up the tallest woman? That's kind of my favorite thing.
She was not from Ireland.
Big people. Giants.
So that was it. So I ate a mussel, and I got violently ill the next morning. And I had to fly to Amsterdam, and there was lots.
Did you poop your pants on the plane?
Let's just say I was in the front row of the aircraft, and thank God, like I got it assigned. We bought the seats the day before.
They're
it's like Ryanair. So like
sit in the bathroom. The
showed
whole
up, and there I had already puked three or four times before that. And here I was on the plane. I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. And so I get up first. She's like, you can't get out of your seat. I said, I have to vomit. Like, I've got to vomit. And I did. And there was no light in the bathroom. Come on. Like, what are the chances of this? So I pulled on my pants.
Uh-oh. Britain.
I pulled. Because I was so, let me tell you, this was the most sick. And I am a dramatic person. I like dramatic things. But I don't have drama.
Yeah.
And I just was like in disbelief that I could feel this poorly.
Yeah.
It was deathly ill. I could barely, it was like a cocaine. It was like you had 50 martinis and three rails of cocaine.
Well, you know, you can die.
And it was twice as bad as that.
You can die from food poisoning like weeks later. So,
well, here I am. It's been 2 weeks.
You could die at any moment. I'm just saying. You have like 2 weeks left until we know that you're not going to die from this.
I was okay. You know, the worst part about it was that I couldn't eat my favorite thing in Amsterdam, which is that apple tart. But that's a different story at a different time.
Well, I have to say, I'm not sorry I missed this part of the trip, although the rest of it sounds fabulous.
Yeah, well, it did, you know what, spurred me. I dropped a couple pounds, and I thought, you know what, this is the perfect post-holiday, like, diet. And I didn't eat any food for 48 hours.
You heard it here, folks, first. If you want to lose weight after the holidays, don't exercise, don't go to a gym, don't drink bone broth, just eat something terribly rancid. Take it from Breton, fly in a plane.
Yeah, exactly.
And look at you now. You look amazing. Breton this morning,
you know,
he texts me, he goes, just so you know, I think you should dress nicely for today's first episode. And so I took him seriously. Now I'm draped in fur and pleather from head to toe.
I showed up with a mink hat.
Breton showed up with a mink hat. He looks amazing.
And I have a poncho that was once owned by Jessica Biel's brother that I bought in Denver.
My mother always used to say, Zara, dress for the job that you want. And so today I'm dressed as though the job that I want is a Ukrainian sex worker.
I was actually going to say, you do kind of look like you. It's the bright red lipstick. And when I saw you, there was a little smudge on her tooth.
Get
and I said, oh, it's like you have just a smudge on your. I'd be a really good gigolo.
Oh, my
Wait, is
goodness.
It gigolo or?
No. A gigolo is like a male prostitute, which I think you would
be. Oh, yeah. I was
a
that
male sex worker, which I think you'd be good at too.
Now I'm just. Yeah, exactly.
So, well, I didn't go anywhere over the holidays, really.
Tell me about your. What you cooked and what
well,
you...
I stayed in. And I'm, you know, holidays, as we mentioned in our episodes pre-holidays, all the things we're hypothesizing about were kind of true about it being difficult during the holidays. Anyone who listens to this podcast or doesn't, my dad died last year.
Okay, just allegedly, so our two moms.
Still dead. Still dead. Has not risen.
A year later.
Year later, still dead. But anyway, it was kind of hard this year, so I kind of threw myself into work and cooking projects and doing stuff that he would have done, and
you know,
cooking, helped me get through it.
Cooking as therapy.
Yeah.
I've always said that.
Yeah, cooking is good therapy. And he was a cook, and he made some things that were really special. So I kind of did that. And then, bing, bang, boom, here we are. The holidays are over. And I normally don't say, like, oh, God, thank God the holidays are over.
No,
but, God. Oh, my, I couldn't possibly have taken another minute of...
January 6th. But, the Three Kings Day. I wouldn't. It's been...
My mom's birthday is January 6th. And so we did some fun stuff. And we went to Keane's. We went to Bavette. We saw the Broadway play Network starring Bryan Cranston, who... Excuse me, Bryan Cranston, are you listening? Call me.
Did you bring gifts to from the Holy Magi to Jesus Christ?
I had sent them in the mail.
Your mom's Jewish.
I got a tracking number, but I don't think they've arrived to Jesus yet. Jesus, if you're listening, call me.
He's just a disciple.
But some fun things happened last year too. You were mentioning to me this like really funny story about last year about a party you had worked.
Oh my God. Oh.
Which I felt I was like, tell it on the podcast and then go tell it to the mountain.
Tell it on the podcast. Yeah, yeah. Well, this reminds me. Ah, yes, there it was. It was the beginning of 20. What it was last year?
1998.
Oh, I know. It was 2018. I know because this year is 2019. Mm. So that makes sense.
You just minus one.
It's super easy.
There you go.
Also, I'm really nervous about 2020, which I'm already starting to prepare for because. Well, 2020. I don't want.
Yeah,
it's just a big.
Are you nervous because you watched Bird Box?
Well, don't. I'm never gonna repeat the word Bird Box. I watched it last night. It was a waste of my life. Don't. And that's stop there.
Fine.
So last year there was a fabulous. So I was. We were broke last. Oh, I was broke again last year. Work was a little tough for me last year.
Okay.
I started freelancing, and that just meant I didn't. Do anything for like 2 months.
You did everything for free.
I defaulted on my credit cards. I've like maxed everything out. I was like, freelancing, it's working out great. I was like, you know, if you just stop paying your American Express bill, it's kind of goes away.
It's free.
Temporarily, I found out. They hunt you down. But they made me a really sweet offer, so it's super awesome, and we're friends again. But this gentleman that I ran into, because we were drinking, we were drunk on New Year's Eve, and I'd mentioned, oh, I do in-home parties, I cater, I cook, you know, I'll throw you a party. And somebody heard that, and somebody knew me, because it's this bar called Brooklyn Social, which is in Brooklyn, it's my favorite bar. And so they called me, and they said, hey, this guy wants somebody to do his going-away party, and here's the deal. The guy needs a... He wants it Russian-themed because he wrote a book about Russia and solving world peace when he was a child and almost died from brain cancer. But this is the anniversary of being alive.
Wow.
And he got divorced. So I was like, wait, first of all, there's a lot of themes. I was like, so do you want me to... So hold
on
a second.
Is it brain cancer themed? Is it Russian themed? Yeah. Is it like Donald Trump themed? Okay.
Well, interestingly enough, I found out that all these things, he was like, I want blinis. I want Russian. You know, he couldn't afford expensive caviar. If you're listening, I wish you would have done that because I told you. But he did get lots of cured salted fishes and salmon roes and all fun stuff. So I made blinis.
Mm-hmm. First time making them?
It was my first time making them.
Long time
okay,
eater.
So this is a classic cooking error. Let's get on the subject of cooking. The one thing that you really learn from... If you're working at a restaurant as a cook, right? You're usually have specific tasks, right? Mm-hmm. So you're doing prep work for such and such. You get a list... Yeah. Right. Or if you have a caterer, if you're a prep cook, you're like, hey, you need to chop onions, this, prep the, I don't know, what?
The huzma what's like, it and the thingamabob.
The huzma what's. Let's just say Brussels sprouts because that's the theme of.
Wash this cucumber for 6 hours.
That was the theme of 20 teens. Yes. Brussels sprouts.
Oh, have you heard? They're like tiny, tiny cabbages.
Oh, I really love them.
You feel like a giant popping a whole cabbage in your mouth.
Anyway, so there I was. I'm like, oh my gosh, you really got to plan ahead for all these things, you know? So I decided to make this yeast. It was like a blini. It's like a... Okay, first of all, let's get down to brass tacks here. Hey, kids, who knows what a blini is? Okay.
I don't, Uncle Bretton. I've never heard of it.
It's a small pancake. that's it. It's a small pancake.
Okay.
It's Russian, so often they're made with buckwheat flour. And for those of you that are listening, buckwheat is neither a grass nor is it related to wheat. Don't even get me started. It's actually most closely related to sorrel and rhubarb.
What?
Are you shocked? Yeah, you don't even know. It stumped you.
I'm not only shocked, I'm flabbergasted.
So it's a grain, right? And it was introduced at some point to Russia.
Oh.
Have you heard of that?
Russia?
Yeah. Have you heard of it? You might have on the news lately because...
Yeah, I heard that's where I'm from now.
Yeah. Well, the Red Scare is not over, apparently.
It's just beginning. Yeah. Boo!
Red, white, house. So anyway, so check this out. So I made some blinis and I'm like, oh my gosh, I tried two different recipes and they were yeasted and this was only after I dropped the Junior's cheesecake, which he had...
This was an experience for you.
So anyway, so I'm making the blinis and I discover they were kind of gooey. It's a very strange batter. You yeast some flour and, you know, some classic things and then you add some whipped egg whites to kind of thicken up, and then you make tiny little pancakes. And it said, well, just spoon them onto the pan. I've made pancakes and blintzes and crepes and all those things. I'm a pro, but practically. And they were the most oblong, strange looking things. Now, Zara, what am I holding in my hand here?
Well, they look like tiny purple pancakes, but
yes.
I know that they're blinis.
These are blinis. My new and improved recipe, and I hadn't made them for a year, but I learned from my mistakes, and I just decided to add some more milk. I was like, just thin the batter out, and then I just poured it. It was perfect.
Yeah, your regular old smarty pants.
So
they look beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know what else. I don't know where else to go.
But you made these blinis last year, and you told me that you brought 100 of them to the party, and they all got gobbled up by the first 10 guests in about.
Let me tell
five
you
minutes.
Something. So the host says, the client says, hey, there'll be about 20 to 25 people. So in my head, I'm thinking, well, a silver dollar pancake for dinner. Plus, there was tons of other food.
Yeah,
don't worry, that wasn't the only thing. I'm like, well, if everybody has four, and some people have two, and some people have six, that averages up to four, right?
Yeah.
So I'll make 100. And plus, they're kind of a pain to make small pancakes, so I make 100. The first hour, they're gone. And the client's like, we need more blinis. I'm like, that's it. I put all 100 blinis out onto the platter.
Yeah, that's something you can't just, like, whip up more.
I mean, now I know if I ever do a Russian-themed party again, which you never know.
if you ever do a Russian
brain
cancer
theme party. Yeah, if you're listening and you want a Russian-themed party, I am a true pro now.
Well, that's very interesting that you happen to be talking about Russian-themed parties and bellinis. It's so curious because this week's topic happens to be about...
Caviar, darling.
That's right, caviar. It's all very high society.
High society.
Oh, well.
Did you know that in Denver there's these joints, if you go to a weed store, I'm sure other places have them. This is when I start to age myself. It's like, there's this thing called marijuana.
I haven't heard of it.
Everybody's been smoking. No, it's a caviar joint. And they take all different kinds of marijuana and they
together.
Yeah, they put the oil on the paper and they roll the, so it's like keef and weed and all the stuff.
Wow.
And then you smoke it and you get totally wasted.
I'm not into that. I have to be honest with you. I'm what we used to call in high school. Everyone we called in high school was kind of like a dingbat. We called them reg lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still a reg lover. I just prefer like regular, like, reg weed.
I just learned what the word reg meant this last summer
from
a 22-year-old.
We used to like tease that. We'd be like, ugh, you're gross. You smoke regs.
I said, you mean classic marijuana? What are you talking about?
No, I love regs. Who needs to be like feeling like they're on acid trip anytime you want to like smoke weed? But
all
anyway,
right.
We're talking about caviar today,
Sorry,
guys.
I get distracted.
The highs and lows of caviar. The ins and outs. It's strange. It's fishy. It's little. It's smelly. Some people like it. Some people hate it. Some people feel kind of whatever about it, like me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, here's the thing.
Can you tell us a little bit about caviar?
Well, first of all, darling, caviar comes from a fish called the sturgeon. Now, traditionally, caviar comes from the Caspian and Adriatic Seas.
And the actual word caviar, which who knows where it comes from, but there's some arguments whether it was from Turkish origin or Greek origin. I don't actually really even care about that because that's, I mean, you could just keep going.
What's the
difference? Where does the letter C come from? Who invented that? Was it Russian or was it Greek or was it of Roman origin? So caviar is pretty fabulous. And the sturgeon fish. So first of all, I kept going and I was like, oh, there's so many layers. Life has lots of layers.
It's like an onion.
And, yeah, but the Caspian Sea is a saltwater sea, but it has a lower salinity level than, say, the ocean. Than that other thing, the ocean. So some parts are very salty and some parts are less salty. Mm-hmm. Over the years, damming and, you know, environmental pollution has caused many of these giant sturgeons to dissipate, of course. So some of the fabulous old caviar. Anyway, let's get back to it. So sturgeon is a giant fish.
Yeah, they're really, they're okay, mad big.
Let's put it this way. There was a couple of fish that were over 2,500 pounds. Pounds up to 2,900 females. They can live up to 118 years old. They're old. Well, not anymore. Because we killed them all.
That's an old fish.
So there's that. There's freshwater sturgeon, which I'll get to later. Some of the sturgeon come from the Great Lakes region, Lake Superior, and Wisconsin, and Minnesota, and all that. Anyway, so it's a large fish, and basically they take it. And they get the mommy that's filled with eggs, and she has tons of eggs, and sometimes only one little egg will survive.
Are you
serious? Yeah, so we shouldn't feel too badly about.
Wait a minute. Eggs. Hold the phone. So when you see the sturgeon get cut open on a fishing boat, and there's millions of eggs, one egg sometimes will
potentially, yeah, not very many. So the survival rate, yeah, that's why they have so many. I mean, it makes sense, right?
But we can eat all the ones that are. In it, basically.
Yeah, well, so somebody gets that lucky fertile egg, good for them.
Oh, I get it. I thought you meant you could only harvest a single egg.
No. So, of course, the tradition, this is, okay, so people say, there's sort of three different, the main things you'll hear about caviar, Savruga, etc., and beluga, but that just refers to the type of sturgeon. You don't have to worry about it. But if you are at a fancy dinner party or fancy restaurant, and you're trying to impress your boss and be like, oh, yes, I met him.
Mr. Trump.
I'm at the Russian tea room. do you love the... First of all, beluga was almost... I think it was illegal for a while, and then it was reintroduced by Petrosian. What is it?
Petrosian.
Petrosian. So...
I was talking to our friend the other day, our friend Mary, about different kinds of caviar, and we were talking about beluga caviar, and she said with utter confidence, she said, oh, well, beluga caviar comes from beluga whales. And I said, excuse me, that's not true. And we had a tiny bit of an argument about
sturgeon.
It until I pulled out the tiny computer that I have in my pocket and Googled it and
your
proved
iPhone.
To her, obviously.
Exactly. So basically, you know, the beluga was the most rare. And actually, they named the word beluga comes from, which meant white, like a white whale. And sometimes the white the white underbelly of the sturgeon was similar. So they called it beluga caviar, blah, blah, blah.
Sorry.
And that was it. So basically, they take it out, and there's a whole process. You know, they have to take the fish out. They have to perform a C-section and take out this giant thing. You know, sometimes they're pounds and pounds and pounds. If an animal's 2,000 pounds, you can imagine how big the egg sac is. And that's it. And then they have people there, like performing doctors and surgeons and tasters, and people have masks on, and they have to take it out. It has to be fresh, and it has to be wrung through a tiny, a sieve to make sure that they get the right ones, and they have to taste it. And it's just like a wine, if a sommelier was there, they'd be like, oh, these grapes suck. These are good. You know, these eggs are good. This one's like, throw it out. So
I'm just picturing a bunch of doctors with caviar stuck all in their teeth. This batch is fresh.
Yeah.
And it's in their mustache.
So now it is a salty thing because it's from the ocean, but of course we think of it as very salty and because it's often cured with salt, but they say, fabulous experts who were that good caviar should not be too salty.
Oh really?
Yeah. So now often you'll serve caviar on a mother-of-pearl spoon, and this was just because the spoons of those days were often plated with silver. I know mine are. I'm sure yours are, too, at home. If not, please polish them now. Get back to me. And the mother-of-pearl spoon would not impart the metallic flavor when you serve it on to your blini.
And you know what? It turns out that we have some high-priced caviar right here. Just kidding.
Oh,
we have some lumpfish caviar because we didn't want to spend $10,000 on a jar of caviar.
Exactly.
So we went to our favorite place, the Hotties. We got a thing of lumpfish caviar.
Mm-hmm.
Don't judge us. Breton made bellinis. Should we eat some of it?
Yeah, let's put a bellini.
And see how it tastes?
Now, so here's, I'm going to tell you right now, I know because we just have a lot to talk about, is that when you have a caviar party, there's a couple books.
When you do, not if you do.
I went to Bonnie Slotnick's cookbooks right over on 2nd and 2nd, I think. Or is that the cock? No, it was Bonnie's. Sorry, Bonnie Slotcocks. Bonnie Slotnick's. And she pulls out all these. I was like, Bonnie, I need give me vintage Russian things, caviar. She pulls out all these books, and there was a couple cool books that I kind of paged through, but one of them said, you know, oh, caviar, must, if you're going to serve caviar, you must serve more tins than possibly imaginable and have guests, you know, have them all over the place so that guests can spoon it and they should vomit when they're done with it.
What?
Yeah.
Oh well, my. Hopefully that doesn't happen to us, although the next person in here might vomit because Breton did bring some chopped up egg and
chopped
onion.
Chopped up. So when you chop up the egg, keep really the white and the yolk separately. You know, steam your eggs. Please, if you're still hard boiling your eggs in a full thing of water, you haven't read the memo of 2015, which is you steam your eggs in a steamer basket. Shells come off great. Anyway, so you separate those, chopped onions, some creme fraiche, some chives, and then the buckwheat blinis.
Mm, can you make me one, please? Now, I'm going to be honest with you guys.
What am I, a servant?
Yes, please, Breton, prepare me one. I don't love caviar. Like, it's not my favorite. I also don't dislike it, and I like pretty much everything.
Okay,
so... It's never been a favorite.
Now, if you look here, I'm using the back of my spoon, which is what a good cook will do. And then, there you go. Oh, look at this.
Oh, and a little creme fraiche. Thank you.
How's that for food styling?
I mean, excuse me.
It's the worst looking thing you've ever seen in my life. Oh, I can hear the eggs popping from here.
Lumpfish.
Yeah, lumpfish.
What did they do with the rest of the lumpfish? That's what I want to know about it.
So I want to hear...
This is a very good blini, Breton.
It's good, right?
Well,
it's
while tangy. We eat...
Oh, my God.
Since, like, most people don't love the sound of chewing, should we take a break and hear a little bit from... do a little commercial break-a-rooney?
Yeah, let's talk about how we're alive.
When we come back, we'll be full and stuffed and asleep.
Yes.
This episode is presented by The Green Grape, a family of three businesses on Fulton Street committed to supporting small-scale farms, celebrating seasonality, and delighting our customers. Order local, pasture-raised meats and cheeses to pair with our selection of fine wines and spirits, and we'll deliver it to your door at no extra charge. From great local gifts to providing you all you need for a delicious meal, The Green Grape offers truly special and hard-to-find products created by New York's community of local makers. Support independent grocers and our site to learn more. Visit greengrape.com. That's green with an E. GREENEGRAPE.com.
Cheers.
Oh my God. I just went to the bathroom and I got rid of all the caviar.
Just like Bonnie Slotnick told
just
you.
Just like Bonnie Slotnick
Bonnie,
told me.
Bonnie, we're
to.
Listening. So I was researching about caviar.
Oh yeah.
Today and I came across a video.
Tell me all about it.
There's a video series on Vice called, now I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called like The Richest or something or something
it's
like that.
The new, it's like the new, like my friend's a DJ. It's like, there's a video series on Vice.
Exactly.
Of everything.
But it's hosted by 2 Chainz, and one of his guests was Robin Leach.
Robin.
Oh, Robin Leach.
This is Robin Leach, and this is the lifestyles of the rich and famous.
That's a little bit more Australian.
Hey, well, I just went to Ireland, so my accent.
So you're just like all over the place.
Exactly.
It was a good try, though, but I expect, let's practice it. Let's work.
I thought it was Robin Leach.
I'm Robin Leach. So it was Robin Leach months before he died. And they were,
which was recently,
and
right?
It was in August. He was gigantically fat. And 2 Chainz and him didn't really get along, surprisingly enough. One, because I don't know. I'm going to actually refrain from saying what I was just going to say. It was a judgment against Robin Leach. But they were kind of fighting, and 2 Chainz wanted to put syrup and butter on the bellinis. And Robin Leach was, like, not having it. And then 2 Chainz kept,
what?
Like...
What? Who cares?
2 Chainz kept teasing him. He's like, you're eating a lot of bellinis, man. you're like really shoving your face with caviar. And Robin Leach is like, I'm Ebola.
Okay.
It was very awkward.
Well,
but,
Robin.
R.I.P.
Slightly disappointed.
R.I.P. It did lead me to the story that I want to tell today.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of relating. I mean, it's very much relating to caviar. And it's about Robin Leach. So caviar.
He was such a figment of, like, I grew up in the 80s and I just.
He was so 80s.
So, I just want that. I want that.
Yeah. I mean, he really embodied this, like, weird opulence that came about in the 1980s.
Michael Jackson,
all kinds of other things.
I watched a bunch of YouTube videos earlier about Robin
Leach. Yeah, me too. I've got Leach on the brain. I've been leached. So in, like, the late 1800s and the early 1900s, caviar was at a point in America where it was being served in bars.
I read about
that. Yeah, because a lot of the domestic caviar that was coming from the Great Lakes.
They had so much.
Wisconsin, Brett and Scott's home state.
The Hudson Valley, Wisconsin, you're right.
Yeah, Delaware. And what they were doing was they were shipping American caviar to Europe and having it sent back and relabeled as Russian. So in I'm not kidding. In the
imposter
year
imposter
caviar.
If you like Obsession, you'll love our imposter fragrances.
Like, it smells like caviar.
I know.
So 90% of the caviar in 1900 in the United States was actually from the United States, but it was had been sent out and imported. So
they
we
put,
were importing
they put like
it
a
back.
Backwards R in it, like yes. Caviar backwards. And
exactly.
They're like, whoa, it's Russian.
Ooh. So this is around the time when the caviar boom happened, right? So then you like go Gatsby-er and everybody's just filling their gullets with fish eggs.
Yes.
They're everywhere. Caviar this, caviar that, caviar toilet paper, caviar face wash. Can't get enough of caviar.
Caviar. I'll have a side of caviar with a caviar.
Yeah, can you do a caviar float
do you guys have gluten-free caviar?
I'll have the caviar bowl, please, and like a caviar toast.
Cool.
But like instead of caviar, can I have caviar? So fast forward to everyone's favorite decade, the 1980s.
I was going to say the 1990s. Come on.
The 1980s.
Okay,
the decade.
Well, clearly, we're never going to get along.
Dubbed the decade of greed. Ever seen the movie Wall Street?
Baby boom.
Great. Greed is good.
Yep.
That's where people were at, right? So we enter the 1980s with that kind of MO. Fast forward again to the year 1984. Popular food and drink. We've got Tab pouring. The Tab is flowing like wine.
Tab.
Cool Ranch Doritos. Tortellini salad with broccoli, raw broccoli and feta cheese.
Oh,
is
God,
trending.
You're right.
Real hard. Yeah. Totino's pizza rolls make a impact
on
the
scene.
Oh, my
God. Tombstone pizza was...
Don't even...
Drumsticks.
Listen.
Oh, God.
We need
was
to
so
do an
much.
Episode that's about shitty pizza. Like shitty frozen pizza
I already
things.
Wrote it down. So
okay,
let's,
good.
Exactly.
Moving forward. The most popular records. Purple Rain. Born in the USA. Ronald Reagan is president. The average rent is $350 a month. Bacon is $1.69 a pound.
Wow. How much was gas?
Gas was about a dollar something a pound. So bacon is more expensive than gas at this point.
That is
very strange,
often,
yes.
Often the case, I've
The kids found. Are watching Ghostbusters, Terminators, Gremlins, and most importantly, I was born in 1984. Yep, my birthday is in 2 weeks. Everybody send a present to Brenton's house.
I thought you were
1981. Yeah, give me up. Does this
I don't
look
know.
Like
I
a 1981 face? Look, there's not a wrinkle on this motherfucker. Look at this.
Right,
look at my side profile.
I don't know about you.
I don't have a single or married gray hair. Also in 1984... A little-known show called Lifestyles of the
Rich
and
Famous. Starring Robin Leach.
Starring your favorite character from Great Britain, Robin Leach. Anyway, so Robin Leach starts this show. He had a long career. He had actually started being in journalism at age 10. He was the youngest reporter ever for the Daily Mail. He just always wanted to be a reporter. And he was fascinated with celebrity and wealth. So he becomes... the host of the show, Lifestyles of Rich and Famous, the tagline, as everybody knows, champagne wishes and caviar dreams. And he screams at a fever pitch. He's frantic. He's crazy. And when I was reading about it, he was saying that he wanted to be basically a human headline. So because he's like, oh, the headlines are always in caps. I want to speak in all caps. So he was very intense on purpose. So they would have people on like Mike Tyson, Lady Diana, Adnan Khashoggi, who Just sidebar, is the arms dealing billionaire and uncle to Jamal Khashoggi. He was the murdered journalist from the Wall Street Journal.
How about that?
I just watched an hour long episode in which they highlighted him on Lifestyles Rich and Rich and Famous. So he's obviously highlighting wealth. He's obsessed with it. He's crazed. Oh, no, we have...
God, it's a perfect storm, wasn't
it? Brooke Shields. He, like, was upset. Everything was Brooke Shields, this and that. Ever wonder how she keeps her perfect figure and her wavy brown hair and her tight little ass? Well, she eats a diet of celery sticks and cocaine.
I waited at Brooke Shields at table 29 at Lupa.
Really?
She was fabulous. She was so nice. This is in the year 2006.
She seemed lovely. So he coined the term. So he does the show, and then he goes on from there to coin the term celebrity chef, so he claims.
He coined that term that ruined everything about cooking?
Basically. And then he's helped start the Food Network, and he was one of the first people to be on the Food Network. And he had a show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where it was basically a weird call-in show. It kind of seemed like an infomercial, but he would do strange things like put on funny glasses and... It was very strange, and it is almost impossible to find any footage of this on the internet. Listeners out there, please call us. Send your Robin Leach videos that we don't have to lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com, please.
I'm going to have to check Vimeo.
It's very hard to find. But so anyway, he helped start this. Also on the early, just sidebar, on Food Network, the early stars, Donna Hanover, who is, this is all part of it going all the way to the top. This is a conspiracy episode. This is a conspiracy
episode.
I'm Richard Nixon now.
Yeah.
But Donna Hanover, who I actually did an event with one time, who is the ex-wife of Rudy Giuliani.
I did that event with you.
Was one of the she first
hosts. She was supposed to be our paired celebrity.
And she just wandered off. She goes, she's like, darling, hello, and then wandered
darling,
off.
Darling, I'm a chef. And then she popped back over. She's like, look at what I made. What's an agra duty? I'm like, no, an agra dolce, you ding dong.
Yeah, never to be heard
from
again.
Sweet and sour, just like your... Anyway, yep. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she wandered
into
the abyss.
Stop me there, sisters.
We've never heard from her again.
Yeah,
So anyway, during Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, right?
I can't believe she was a food.
Ugh. I know. The whole thing is really just enough.
Don't get me started.
So Robin Leach started, not only did he really contribute to this whole kind of aspirational thing about food, I mean, particularly with the tagline using caviar wishes, caviar dreams, champagne wishes and caviar dreams. He started
I ate more caviar food, right when you said that.
I'm trying to make this connection here of how he started tying food to being aspirational. Right. And then he also started reality television, and he also started television about kind of nothing. And so then after that, in the 90s,
reality television,
you have Cribs. Right. And then you have shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and you have The Simple Life. And then unfortunately, in 2010,
don't say it.
You have The Apprentice.
Don't say it. You said it.
Now, also in 1994, Donald Trump appears on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with then wife, Marla Maples at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, that's right, his first wife.
To talk about how he thinks his one-year-old daughter will have a nice rack someday and has nice legs. A fucking one-year-old.
Well, she does.
Says has nice legs.
Well, he was right, I guess.
I mean, so anyway, Robin Leach remained a staunch Trump supporter until he died.
That's so crazy.
He said his daughter had nice legs. Now, where I'm going with this is that years later, The Apprentice goes on the air in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Culture surrounding worshiping rich people, caviar, champagne, money, billionaires, big houses, people who essentially do nothing and are not good morally.
Hoarders.
Then this person becomes the president because people idealize him because of his wealth. He was given a lot of airtime on things. He was with Michael Jackson in the intro for Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
I watched it.
So the point I'm trying to make now is that caviar, from its humble beginnings when it was served in saloons as basically trash food, somehow became aspirational through supply and demand, and sneakily sending it off pretending that it was Russian, and then sending it back to America, driving the price up, and now it's essentially why Donald Trump is president.
And we think we're fabulous because we're sitting here with Blaney's. Well, I have to say, salt factor.
I think it's an interesting parallel.
I think it makes sense.
It's very strange.
Well, I'm going to reclaim caviar to this day today.
For the Democrats.
Yes, for the Democrats. So starting to now, everybody, those of you that are fabulous. And by the way, it can be salmon roe. It can be something else salty.
Yeah. Well, let's give that in our tip. Well, should we talk about our chef recommends about how to enjoy caviar on a budge?
Yeah. You know, okay. Now, what I just ate here, since it's very fresh on my palate, actually. Gulp. Yep. I just had it. Is that it's salty. Mm. And even though it's good, caviar shouldn't be salty, but it has the texture. But really, I think what's fun about serving the whole thing is the condiments and the blinis. Mm. Like, that's the fun part, right? Mm-hmm. So you could buy some salmon,
salmon roe?
Like, they call it ikura, right?
Yeah.
It's not that expensive.
It's not. Salmon roe is a good option. I also enjoy, if you want to just have fun, there's wasabi caviar that's available. You can get it at Russ and Daughters. It's delicious. One time I got a bagel from Russ and Daughters with the wasabi caviar on it. I dropped it on the ground. It fell kind of in a puddle. I picked it up and ate it anyway because I had waited so long to get it.
I've done that.
And then I got food poisoning from it because I ate something out of a puddle. So, but yeah, using different alternatives to just, you know, really fine caviar. I mean, the thing we just got, it's a big jar. It's pretty tasty and it was $9.
You know what? You don't want caviar? Go get yourself some thinly sliced smoked salmon. You want the salt factor, right?
Or Botarga.
Oh, Botarga. Oh my gosh. Can you tell a Botarga story and then we'll...
very quickly. So I was at a Christmas party 2 years ago. I'm the only guest.
Not cooking. You were a guest.
I was a guest. The only other, I didn't know anyone there, and there was nobody there. I was the first guest, except for a very famous comedian, recently got in trouble for masturbating in front of people. His name rhymes with Michael Bublé.
Louis Schley.
And so him and I are the only two guests there. When you're the first guest at a party, you're supposed to chat with people. I was like, so what do you do? Completely ignored me. He started tearing through this beautiful buffet that had been set up in front of us, mm-hmm. chomping down salamis, basically biting out of wheels of cheese while I'm looking at the books on the shelf. He's completely ignoring me. For some reason, the host of the party had put out a chunk of Botarga, which is cured
fish. It's a big salted
cured
block,
mullet roe. It's kind of like caviar, but cured together. And for some reason, this was on the table of antipasti.
Kind of looks like a stick of red butter, right?
He cuts off a chunk, almost half the piece, puts it in his mouth, and chews it and swallows it. So anyone who's ever had Botarga out there, you will understand how disgusting that is.
It tastes like reduced salt.
It's crazy. And I was like, you know what? You got what you deserved for many reasons. So, Bretton, quickly before we have to wrap up, what are your top three places in the city or elsewhere to enjoy caviar?
Okay. Do you remember that place? And unfortunately, I hate to say to recommend closed places. Do you remember Pravda?
No.
It was in, I think it was called Pravda. It was in Soho. And it was just this fabulous Russian place. You'd go get your chilled vodka and caviar. That was a fun place. And then I love, obviously, the Russian Tea Room. And probably my third place, you know what? I hate to blanket a statement, but anywhere they serve a seafood tower, most places will have a caviar, addition.
Like Balthazar.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
To me, that just screams New York. And
totally.
If you feel like spending that much money. Unfortunately, I only do it when I'm on clients' accounts. I mean, fortunately for me, unfortunately for them. What about you?
My number three is, casually, I like to get... I love Shelsky's.
Shelsky's in Brooklyn.
And shout out to Peter Shelsky, friend of the show.
Go Google it.
Wonderful human. I love going in there and getting special stuff for holidays. They always have little jars of nice caviar near the holidays. Of course, number two would have to be Russ and Daughters Cafe.
But going in the Lower East Side.
Amazing. In the Lower East Side.
Manhattan.
Yep. In the Isle of
Manhattan. And what's your number one?
My number one, you already said it, is the Russian Tea Room.
Well, we tied then.
I think we should go there right now.
I think we should.
Right? We've already polished off a bottle of champagne. I smeared caviar all over my leather skirt. I now smell like you, Ukrainian
sex
worker.
The entire radio studio smells like chopped scallions and egg yolks. I can't wait for the next show.
Welcome. Here we are. We just left the studio smelling like a rotten egg.
Well, turns out caviar is glamorous.
Guys, Bretton.
Yeah?
This was fun.
What a fabulous, wonderful thing, right?
Cheers. And thank you to Heritage Radio Network for having us. We're so happy to be here. It's lovely. And thank you for listening. And
I'm just glad we can drink.
I know. I mean, our old studio boss was so rigid.
I know. We used to be able to smoke weed, but I guess we can't smoke inside. But it's not because of the weed. It's because of the smoking thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank
you
very
much. Don't do
drugs, kids. So listen, go make yourself some blinis. Check out our Instagram page. It's Life's a Banquet. podcast, right, mm-hmm. on Instagram. There, you know, you can find out all of our stories and all of our information about the blinis we made and the caviar that we bought. And we'll just keep posting all kinds of stuff so you can stay tuned and stay in the know with yeah. Life's a Banquet.
And please also, if you want us to keep buying expensive, fancy things on someone else's dime, donate to our Patreon page. And email us. We want to read some of your emails and questions on air and do some call-ins at lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Again, this is Brett and Scott and
Zara Tangora. Hasta la pasta.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.